Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Courtney Dominguez.
All right, Vedette Pieris, welcome to the Ivy Podcast. Thank you so much for being with me today.
Likewise, Courtney. Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here to be talking on a subject that we both are so passionate about.
Yeah, it's true. I don't get to interview a lot of women in technology because, you know, there's so few of us. So this is especially exciting to me to be able to interview somebody that I know has had a lot of similar experiences and background as I have. So if you can you tell us a little bit about your background and what it is you're doing in your current role?
Of course. So in the last 10 years specifically as a technology executive, I've been managing the IT function for organizations. And these days, Courtney, technology is moving so fast. I find myself at the table for anything from digital transformation to enterprise solutions, cybersecurity, software delivery. The list is long and exciting. But that's not where my career started. My career actually started 20 years ago as a software engineer. And I spent my first decade in IT really just immersed in the software development lifecycle. From project management, business analysis, engineering, architecture, just supporting real senior leader executives in transforming organizations. And along the way, I was really blessed to work with a lot of leaders and learn from them.
Well, great. And I know as female executives, you know, you've held, various positions within technology, starting from a developer and moving, you know, up and through the ranks. So what are some of the challenges that you see that are facing women, both in IT and in corporate culture and organizations in general?
Gosh, so many things, so many thoughts are flooding my mind right now. Let me just start out by saying that woman or man in IT, it's a challenging function. The fact that today we expect IT to be on 24/7, 365 days a year, mm-hmm. creates a high pressure on work-life balance and resourcing. But specific to women, and some of these are challenges I've experienced, and some of these are challenges I've supported women peers in. The first thing that comes to mind, Courtney, is mentoring. You know, women have expressed time and time again that they are looking to further their career. They are looking to broaden their skill sets and are looking to partner with people who will help them in that journey. And they find that they cannot really find mentors and partners to help them on that journey. The other thing that comes to mind is gender bias. You know, whether you're in technology or whether you're on the executive track, we are conditioned, and this is not something we're doing intentionally. It is just decades of conditioning. We think that these roles are lending towards men, whether it's executive track or technology, for that matter, even doctors and surgeons, right? It's just not necessarily something bad we're doing. We've inherited these mind models along the way. And in that, we weave in pay inequality, right? The McKinsey report this year shows that women are making 81 cents to the dollar in comparison to their male peers. And that gap actually widens as women progress in their career. And what's even more questioning is that women of color actually make about 75 cents to the dollar in comparison to their male counterparts. And then there's a lot of women express the need to have to fit in with the boys. They express having to change their communication style, leadership style, management style, presentation styles in order to feel like they fit in. And that can be very draining on them. And while we're talking about a boys club, there is also, let's just say, a girls club, right? I have observed that not all women, but sometimes women do have challenges partnering with other women. And they have difficulty sharing the success together. So those are some challenges that come to mind. Another one that I personally experienced is childcare. We still bear childcare as a major responsibility as women.
Even more so right now with working from home and trying to balance everything.
Yes, it is crazy, right?
Yeah.
And I agree. And me personally in technology, you know, or in technology, our teams are globally dispersed today. And with that comes a high travel requirement. And it's hard for women to travel, especially when you're raising kids and you're looking for flexibility as well, because a lot of the technology go lives happen off production crews. And so that does create a need to always be on, always be present for the business, which can be a challenge for women.
And I think almost sometimes even being more hyper-present, like you feel the need to be even more present because you feel like, you know, your potentially your counterparts and male counterparts are doing that, right? They're always available. They're always on. And what I find is, especially as a female, I feel like I need to be just as on and just as available to kind of go against the impression that, you know, I am a mom and I do have things to do outside of work. And not that men don't, men do too. But I think a lot of the burden especially tends to fall on women, and especially, you know, when you're talking about child rearing or the house or the home or taking care of things. And now more than ever with people working from home because of the pandemic, I think a lot of that burden, and you know, I'm sure you've seen the news reports as well, where a lot of that burden really is falling on women and even falling out of the labor force, unfortunately, because of all of the extra, you know, burden of trying to do homeschooling and working from home. It's difficult.
It's very, very difficult indeed.
So what do you recommend as far as, you know, overcoming some of these hurdles? I mean, there's you've listed a lot of challenges and I've certainly encountered a lot of them myself. So what are some of your recommendations on how women can overcome some of those hurdles?
Mm-hmm. So I don't know if I have all the answers, but I can share what's really worked for me over the course of the week. When it comes to mentoring, right, and I really believe that mentoring is key to elevating women. Women have a tendency to prefer female mentors, right? And it's just a comfort zone for us. And I would urge women, and while I urge them, I can only share what's worked for me, is seek out male mentors. Primarily because if we know that 28% of tech roles are filled by women and only 21% are in the C-suite, that in itself tells us that there aren't many women out there to mentor. My personal experience, all my mentors, all my lifelines, all my coaches in my professional life are male. And in fact, in my very early career, Courtney, the people who came tapping on my shoulder and saying, Vera, you need to look beyond this and have you considered some other roles, were actually male who helped me see beyond the role that I was seeing. And so I'm very grateful for that. It's worked very well for me. Now, I know sometimes being a mentee is challenging because you do have to expose your vulnerabilities in working with your mentor. That is especially hard if you're working with a mentor in your organization. And so my suggestion for women would be, in scenarios like that, reach out to perhaps your past managers from previous jobs where you can confidently tell them what your gaps are as you see it and work towards. But there's a lot of great senior male leaders out there who want to elevate women, and we have to seek them out at this point. And that's really going to help us. And if I may share a personal story with you here. In my very early career, I used to genuinely feel that men did not understand my struggle in technology, and men did not understand my struggle as a leader. And I realized I was operating with bias, because the men that I work with today to elevate my career, one of them is actually coaching their own daughter through leadership challenges. The other is actually supporting his wife in her leadership journey. And so through their personal relationships, I am the beneficiary of that because they truly understand what I'm going through. And so I urge women to think of senior male leaders as people first. They too are husbands, they too are dads and granddads and so on. And they truly do have the ability to understand our struggles.
You know, I've also been very fortunate, had a lot of great, you know, male leaders that have been, you know, have looked out for me or helped me or found ways, you know, to continue to grow in the organization. So I've really been very lucky, but it is so true that it's really hard to find female mentors. And you really do need to look at males because I find there's so few women in leadership executive roles, you know, that it's challenging to find them. And everyone wants to look to them, you know, females especially want to look to them to be, you know, they're someone that they can really help, you know, guide them, because there's just so few. And I'll tell you, personal story as well. So I went to a breakfast and they said that it was all women, and they said they were going to be pairing, you know, at the tables, they would be pairing some of the senior leaders with you know, younger like leaders. And I was so excited because I was like, oh, this is exactly what I, you know, I've been wanting. And I got there and I realized that they had actually put me, I was a senior leader. And so, well, in my mind, I thought I was going to be paired with, you know, other people that were in more senior roles than I was. But then I got there and I realized that I was actually the senior leader at the table. So not, you know, I love to be able to mentor women, and I love to be able to, you know, help others as well, and especially help them, you know, as they navigate through their early careers. But, you know, as female, more senior leaders, you know, it's nice to be able to find some of those mentors as well. So, but I do appreciate your thoughts on male leaders, because that's also very, very important. I mean, we shouldn't just be looking at females. We should be looking at, you know, men and women in those various roles that can really help to elevate us.
And that's an important, that's such a beautiful story, because, you know, it's important, because even women who are in leadership roles, right, we feel like we're imposters, and we have to get over that in order to help other women, right? That's really right. What it is. So that's an amazing story.
Also, I just think I'm younger than I really am. So I think that's probably part of it as well. I just want to feel like I'm younger and not be one of the, you know, the seniors at this point, you know, so I was trying to make myself feel better, but they rained on that parade.
I'm with you on that one. I'm with you.
So
then, if I may, going into gender bias, right, I really believe that this is something that's just going to evolve over time. I really am optimistic and hopeful on that one. I recently actually took the Harvard Implicit Gender Test online, and I realized that I too had biases. And the great part about biases is the one thing about it is we all have them, even though we think we don't, and I was quite surprised. And the great part about them is once you know what your biases are, it's kind of like driving. Once you know where your blind spots are, you know how to adjust your rearview mirrors. And I think like that actually helping me further my career. So I would ask women to be aware of those biases, whether it's even biases about working with male leaders, right? You got to identify them and know what they are.
You know, I think the other thing that's interesting about that is when you talk about bias, and now you're looking at how, you know, AI and doing the resume parsing and going out and how there's a lot of bias in that as well, because the words that they've traditionally used are words, you know, it's based on historical data that is mostly male resumes, right? Or resumes coming from a very predominantly male population and of applicant pool anyway. So, you know, it's interesting how even unconsciously in technology, bias is built into it without even knowing it. And, you know, I'm glad that that's being recognized and corrected. But unfortunately, you know, that's already been occurring for several years now, where, you know, it's been potentially misidentifying candidates just because of the words that are used on their resumes.
Very true, very true. And which also kind of makes important the reason as to why women really need a seat up at the table as we devise all these technologies, right, to catch the biases that we're embedding in the technology subconsciously. And along the lines of pay inequity, the best advice I can give here is negotiate and negotiate hard and do your research. You know, reach out to friends. Sometimes it is hard to get the numbers, but also think beyond the base compensation. Think about the benefits that come with the package in terms of stock options, equity, and so on, because you really have to learn how to negotiate the entire package. And reach out to your mentors in order how to approach these negotiations. There are some great classes online as well in negotiating your compensation package.
So I think, you know, it's interesting because I think more and more now too, you're hearing from not just women, but also men who are, you know, having those conversations. I think previously, you know, a lot of people didn't talk about it. You didn't talk about salary, you didn't talk about benefits, and you didn't talk about that stuff. But more and more, I mean, you're seeing it with celebrities and movie roles, and you're seeing it in television, and you're certainly seeing it in corporate environments as well, where people are having those conversations. And I think it's really important, you know, to be able to bring all of those, not just negotiation, but also all of those data points and really know that going in. And because, you know, you're so much better off when you have all of that, you know, working for you.
Absolutely. And I think that's changing. You know, we're more open to talking about it. And in that same line, it's as hiring managers, we all have a call to action, right? We've always traditionally looked at this as driving the bottom line of the organization, but really our call to action now in these conversations is, how do we turn that around? How do we make sure that when we are hiring people and we are promoting them as well, in terms of promoting women and hiring women, that we're keeping them in the pay ranges that are in alignment with their male counterparts? And so we definitely have a role and a role to play in contributing to closing that.
So this is a great segue into, you know, you as someone that's been at the seat at the table and been in executive roles in IT, you know, how do you cultivate female leaders and help elevate them so that, you know, they also have a seat at the table? I know we had a discussion prior to this, you know, our discussion now, where we talked about it's so difficult, right, to have that seat at the table. And not only that, but also identify the next level of future leaders to be able to come up through the ranks as well. So, you know, what are your thoughts on kind of cultivating that and helping female leaders really succeed?
Right. So one is mentoring. Mentoring is key, you know, in terms of elevating women. And the next is partnership. Really partnering with your male counterparts or female counterparts to make sure you have that seat at the table. I've had challenges keeping my seat at the table, and that's when I reached out to my male peers and have asked for their support directly. Will you help me with this? And I have never heard a no. I really haven't. Very often, I will even reach out to my bosses and ask for their support. And so there's the challenge of getting the seat at the support and seat at the table, and then there's the challenge of keeping it, right? And
being
And this is where it really is teamwork. It really takes a village to make sure that we are keeping women up. The other thing is also creating a culture of inclusion. You know, it's very easy to appoint women in seats of leadership, but what does it really take to keep them there, right? And we have to look at a flexibility, because we do need flexibility to deal with counter challenges or whatever have you. We also need an environment that really listens to the recommendations we're making, feeds them, and also respects them and considers them. And, you know, we're part of the decision-making process, right? We want to feel included. And so those are all key elements in creating cultures that really include women into and keeping them at the seat, keeping them at the table.
I think it's a great point, because I think, you know, you're now... There's a, especially within Fortune 500, Fortune 100 companies, I think more and more companies are recognizing that it's very important to have women in leadership roles and board roles as well. But it's one thing to appoint them and say female leader, or another thing, make sure that you're creating inclusion where, you know, they feel like they are a real partner in the decision-making process and the strategy for the company, and not just the token female that's been appointed.
You know, I've always been involved in advisory and consulting my entire career. And it's just something that comes naturally to me. It's helped me stay involved in my community, helped me give back, but it also keeps me exposed to everything that's happening in industry. And most recently, something that really stuck with me is, here it is, we're talking about creating seats for women at the table, right? But what if we put women in positions where they could create those seats at the table? And that's kind of something that really resonated with me. And so as I looked to all the communities that I work within, I started to think about, well, how do I help women entrepreneurs? And what are really the challenges that they're experiencing? And how can I help them create those seats at the table? And the truth is, women entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs in general, their needs for technology are no different from business, right? Either they're building a viable product to take to market, or they're trying to figure out, how do I use technology to run my business? And as I started to talk to them, I realized that they really do have a need. And oftentimes, because they are entrepreneurs and in the startup phase, their resources are limited. And so I'm really trying to find ways on how I can help them either choose technologies to run their business or help them in advisory role and giving them advice to build out their product.
And so I'm sure there's a lot of challenges that come with that as well. So can you describe some of the challenges? And I'm guessing there's challenges with startups, but then I'm guessing that there's probably some specific challenges that, you know, female entrepreneurs are facing. So, you know, is there something specific that you're seeing as you're working with these various companies?
Right. So one challenge that a lot of female entrepreneurs really express is getting funded. right? For example, venture capital, the entire space is extremely male dominated. Mm-hmm. And in fact, PitchBook said something like 2% of venture capital goes to female-only owned businesses. And so what that tells us is that male-owned businesses are getting the line.
Yeah.
In working with female entrepreneurs, they also say that they don't quite know how to navigate this system yet. Right? And so that's been a challenge. The good news is their challenge and the organizations around this are gaining traction. There's a lot of organizations coming up to help women specifically navigate this funding area. And there's also a lot of organizations emerging to give them the assistance they need, whether it's a space to work out of, whether it's advisory roles, and so on. So it is gaining traction. Another thing I hear from women, kind of similar to women in IT, is they're not being taken seriously, either because they cannot make the post 6 o'clock meetings for networking or so on because they're handling private care, or they're not being taken seriously because the product or service is focusing on solving problems for women only. And similar to a year ago when we heard a lot of the stories emerging in the tech industry about sexual harassment, there are similar stories amongst women entrepreneurs that indicate suggestive behavior. But the good news is this is gaining traction. You know, we're even seeing VC companies build out arms that are specifically focused on women entrepreneurs.
One of my favorite stories is about Sarah Blakely and her beginning Spanx. And she talks about, you know, that's privately held, and I think she holds the majority of that company. But one of her biggest problems was finding a manufacturer that would take her product seriously, because, you know, she'd essentially taken a pair of pantyhose and cut the feet off of them, and it became, you know, shapewear. And when she was going out to look for manufacturers, all of the manufacturers were men, and they didn't understand it, you know, didn't. But she had one that I forget how many daughters he had, but daughters and a wife. And similar to your story about mentors, you know, he went home and told them about this product, and they were like, "You have to call her back. Like, that's amazing. Like, we need that, you know." And now you look and think about what an amazing company that is, and, you know, what a product as well. And it's, of course, spun off all of these other shapewear products, you know. So it's just such an interesting story. But you're right. It's that finding the right men, women, whatever, that support you and really understand it, but also the men looking and saying, okay, you know, maybe I don't get it. Maybe I don't understand shapewear, but, you know, I'm going to go home and talk to my wife or my daughter or, you know, my friend or someone that does understand it. So I appreciate everything that you're doing to help open the doors and really help women in startups, because there's such a gap in that space of really female entrepreneurs really making it and getting their companies really up and running. So looking back, right? I mean, we've had a few years as much as probably I don't want to admit it. As a female leader, we've had a few years in this space. So what advice would you give to your younger self? And what would you say, you know, in hindsight that, you know, you've learned and that has really shaped the course of your career, and perhaps advice that others can follow as well?
Great question. So the first thing that comes back to mind as I reflect on my career is to define success for yourself as you see it. And this is interesting because I was recently reading this, that men and women actually define success very differently. And there's research from HBR as well as Vanderbilt that shows this. So men define success based on the income and the compensation package that they're currently receiving. More so than women. Women, on the other hand, define success as the quality of relationships they have in an organization, the impact and influence they have within the organization, also more so than men. And this was very important to me, because if you don't realize or understand how you define success, it is very easy to go from trophy to trophy and feel unfulfilled, right? And the other thing that's very important about this is it helps you identify who are the right people with similar value systems that you should be working with, and likewise identify the right companies you should be working for. And so to me, this was a very interesting learning because it really has helped me understand things as what it is I want to do, but also how I want to go about it and what success really means for me. Personal story, in my younger years, I defined success as the weight of my paycheck, the title, and where in the org chart I placed. And that eventually evolved into what is the impact I have within the organization. And today it's more along the lines of what is the impact I have in the organization, that what is the impact I have in my community and people in general, you know, around me? How am I going to leave this world a better place than what I inherit? And that is how I define success today. And it's very different. And it's okay to change your definition of success along the way because
yeah,
we are humans and we are evolving and we need to evolve. And that's one thing I think of. The other thing is don't be afraid to walk away. And in the words of Tanya Edwards, have the courage to walk away when respect especially is not being served. And walk away means different things to different people. It could mean you're on a project and you need to find another project in your organization that welcomes your thoughts and your ideas. It could mean you need to find another manager in your organization that you're going to better partner with. Sometimes it could mean you need to walk away from the organization because it can no longer support the next set of your goals. And sometimes it just means you need to walk away from the meeting. You know, it's as simple as that. But have the courage to walk. The third thing I think about is know your audience. There are genuinely people out there who really want to support you and who really want to see you succeed. They are your audience. There's always going to be naysayers, but you got to know the difference, right? And that's key. And the last thing I'll leave you with here is, and this came to me very late in my career, is savor the journey and realize your destination. And I wish I had learned this early on because, you know, I went through my career focusing on milestones. And even though I was achieving milestones along the way, I just wasn't feeling fulfilled. And I had to turn around and wonder why. And that's when I realized that I hadn't savored the journey. And what that does for you is it changes the way you reflect on your career. You now, when you start looking at the journey, you can see yourself and how you evolved along the way, how people have contributed to that evolution. And you realize that there's a whole village out there supportive of you. And just knowing that is very empowering indeed.
I think that's great advice, Vinette. All of those points are really important. And I don't know about you, but I know I wish I had known of those, you know, 20 years ago, because I think going in, especially, you know, enjoying the journey as well, right? So enjoying the journey that you're on and knowing that where you are now is a product of the journey that you've been on. And then, you know, there's a whole future ahead as well, but also really walking away, knowing when it, having the courage to walk away, I think, is really difficult. And especially early on, that's a really difficult thing. But, you know, the more you grow in your career, the more you realize that, you know, you'll find your tribe and you'll find your audience. And that's really important. And they're going to welcome you and help you and help you grow. So, Vinette, thank you. I think this has been great. I know women and men are going to get a lot from the advice that you have, and I look forward to hearing more about your you helping all of these female entrepreneurs and helping them become, you know, these great great companies and your journey in that as well. So thank you for all your time today and all of your advice. I appreciate it.
Likewise, thanks for your time, Courtney, and thanks for everything you do, including awareness around this.
Thanks, Vinette. I appreciate it.
Bye now.
We really hope you've enjoyed this episode. Please take a moment to rate, subscribe, and leave a review on your preferred podcast listening platform. We really appreciate that effort. Until next time.